Digital Arena on the app, on your smartphone, on X, YouTube, and Facebook. The Sportscast. Basketball and more.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
Welcome to the Sportscast, March 21st, 2025. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Facebook, X, and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online, the digital radio. You can visit our website, thesportscast.net, or go to our X and IG at the Sportscast One and check out our app, the Sportscast, for our iOS. As you saw in the clip, a goal by Panama Cecilia Waterman scored a stunning goal in the fourth minute of second half injury time, where Panama beating the U.S. 1-0 in the CONCACAF Nations League semi-final. And join us to rehash all this, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Hey, Santi. It's good to be back.
It's good to be back, Hal. Wow, what a game last night. Panama has our number. They've beaten us 3 out of 4 years to beat us the last time in Copa America and also in the Gold Cup. But this match was a stunner in a way, but I kind of saw it coming. Panama had our number. It's kind of like the curse of the Bambino, but not that bad. But but they got us going.
Yeah, they're a hard team for everyone to play against. I think that's clear. Everyone acknowledges that now. They are top four team in the region, and you have to really work to beat them. But the games that they've played against the U.S. have featured a sameness. There have been one time they scored an early goal and we just never, you know, could tie it up. But the other ones, you know, went a lot like last night's game, where it was scoreless for a long time, you know, 70, 75 minutes. And at the end, they're the ones who got the break and they win the game 1-0. But, you know, the problem is you can't win a game if you don't score. And for whatever reason, we're just not able to score against this team. It's been difficult under Pochettino, under Berhalter. It's just not happening against them. They are hard to play, but they're not that hard to play.
Yeah, like Hal was saying, on paper, the U.S. had a lot, a amazing roster. We have a lot of Europeans playing. Panama's roster was good, but USA is way more superior than Panama. Let's look at the roster. Of course, we got Josh Sargent up front and Pulisic right behind him. Weah on the wing, McKinney on the wing, Adams and Tessman in the central defenseman, and defense Scally, Reem, Richards, Musa, and Matt Turner in this roster. But what do you think about this roster going up against Panama? Were you kind of happy with what Pochettino put, or you think some players are not where they need to be?
Well, I thought that it was interesting that he played three in the back, really. Musa is listed there as a fullback, but he's not. He was a very attacking player last night, and they really played three across the back, which I think is the way they have to play. I don't think Scally is honestly up to the job, but he's always looking frantic to me and just doesn't really bring anything offensively down, you know, the sideline. Of course, we didn't have Anthony Robinson last night. He's a big-time player for them and very dangerous. Down the left, you know, wing as a left fullback. So, you know, I think this is fine. We had the firepower to win. And we talked about it quickly before we came on today. There were lots of chances for the U.S. to score. McKinney had one. Josh Sargent did score. They called it back for an offside that I did not see. And I frankly thought they were going to award the goal because there was somebody who was offside when the shot was taken, but he was 15 yards away from the goal and not involved in the play at all. It was McKinney. So I watched the game on Telemundo, and my Spanish is good enough to figure out exactly what was going on, but they restarted the game and obviously did not give Did not give the goal. Sargent hit the post on a freak deflection that was going in and hit a you know, a defender who didn't know anything about it and goes off the post. They were unlucky, but look, how many times are you going to be unlucky against this team and not beat them? They stack up just fine with this team, but you know, don't underestimate Panama. You know, they have a lot. They have a lot of talent. This guy Waterman, I'd never seen him before. He came on and scores the goal. Cascarilla, you know, used to play with Houston, and he's now playing in the Colombian League. They have players, and they're really big and physical. I think that's the thing that always impresses me about them. They're very, very tough physically, and they have enough skill to make you pay, as we learned in the 90th minute last night.
Yeah, keep in mind with Panama, they had five defensemen in the back, so that definitely was tough to break through. Pochettino, he mentioned something in his press conference about, you know, not have enough grit, not enough hiding power for the players that were wearing the U.S. shirt. Do you think there was a lack of grit, that like that spark to get things going on the final third of the field?
I don't know that I would say that. If you have trouble motivating yourself to play in this game, you got problems, because these are the games that win you a place in a World Cup finals, you know, in a year's time. Josh Sargent didn't play badly. He put in a good shift for an hour and should have scored, did not. But I don't think that it's ever down to motivation. But I will say I was disappointed that the crowd was so small and so not into it. It wasn't the most... And who knows who would have been that in that crowd if Mexico wasn't playing, you know, at 10:30 Eastern right afterwards. That place was rocking when they played Canada, and we can get to that. But not a great showing from the U.S. team, not a great showing from the U.S. fan base in L.A. And frankly, the first time that we've really looked at Pochettino and said, what the hell? This was not a performance that anyone could be proud of. And it was a game we needed. It wasn't, you know, against a top team in the region. It was a game we needed for a lot of different reasons, and they couldn't get a result. And you could tell he was annoyed, but he set them up, you know, I thought in a way that was just fine. Tanner Tessman in the middle of the field is, you know, was not effective as far as I could tell getting forward. They had Adams next to him, so he had the ability, Pochettino did, to put someone next to him that was a little more offensive-minded, maybe Musa in the middle of the field. They ended up playing Musa and McKennie down one flank, and I guess that was their best flank because the other flank had Scally over there supporting Weah. Weah was not bad. Again, they had chances. I didn't see the shots on goal. That's not always the greatest measure, but they had more chances to score than their opponent. They just couldn't make anything happen. There we go. Total shots, 12-3. Five on target. One. They had one shot on target, and it was the goal?
Pretty much, yep.
Oh, I hate that. But that's football.
Yeah, which I wouldn't bring that up with the goal. Matt Turner, big talk about him not playing Nottingham for as much. Actually, no, he's in Crystal Palace. He's loaned out by Nottingham. Mm-hmm. Not getting much playing time, only when there's like a cup game. Big argument there. What are your thoughts about that, Hal? You think he should not have been starting last night?
No, not for that reason. Goalies get time, you know, with their clubs in different ways. Turner is playing, you know, in the FA Cup and played in the League's Cup. He's getting reps. And I think this whole matter is a little bit overplayed. There are times when our best players, like Landon Donovan, are at Everton, and, you know, he's getting pulled off or starting in a spot way for, you know, in the best league in the world. And they're like, well, he's not starting for his club team. He's our best player. It doesn't matter whether he's starting or not. Pulisic, of course, is starting. But if he weren't, he'd still have a place in this team. And Pochettino would be crazy not to play him. This is not Brazil. We have to use, you know, the tools we have. But Turner, when the goal went in, you know, it was a very, very well-placed shot, but it wasn't a lightning bolt. It sort of dribbled in. And when that happens, you know, you have to look at where the goalie was positioned. And Turner was positioned at the near post, like right at the near post. Like right at the near post in a way he would be properly if the shot was coming at a very severe angle. And when you look at the goal again, it wasn't really at that severe angle. He was clearly out of position, because when you roll that ball into the far corner, a good goalie, a world-class goalie, gets to it. And, you know, Turner is a world-class shot stopper. I've never had any issue with that aspect of his game, and that's why I don't think it's a big deal that he started. I would like to see the backup, Lincoln, Zach Steffen, I think. Zach Steffen. I like Steffen. I think he's a good player. He's much better with his feet than Turner is. He's in MLS, you know, and getting more regular time if you care about that kind of thing. But yeah, you know, so look at Turner right there. Is he out of position? Zoom back in on that. That was a pretty good thing. You know, is he out of position? Maybe. But that ball was just dribbling in. He didn't get a good jump on it, and he could have saved it if he was one step to his right. I understand, you know, the whole guarding the near post and everything. You know, but that this is we're getting lost in the details. They didn't deserve the win because they couldn't score. And eventually, against a good team, you're going to give up a goal. And Panama's a good team, and I think we're a good team, but they blanked us, and we couldn't blank them.
Yeah, it's quite something there. But as Hal said, you know, like to look out and check out Zach Steffen, and a good opportunity versus Canada this weekend would be a good opportunity for that to happen. He'll probably start. The others, my final game was Canada versus Mexico. Early goal by Raul Jimenez, who's having a fantastic time at Fulham, scored the opening minute. And then again, he scored two goals, 75th minute from a free kick. Mexico and Canada, great matchup, very tight, but Mexico got the upper hand.
I think Mexico was better, but Jimenez won the game for them almost single-handedly. He's been very good for Fulham, and it's great to see because they had that serious head injury. When you pick your head up and look at this Mexico team, they've had a ton of questions for the last 2 years. They've not played very well. They've beaten the U.S. just once, you know, in the last six or seven matches. This last game in Guadalajara, I guess, in October was the last one. But that was B team against B team. I was there for that. And but you pick up your head and look at this team with Jimenez and Jimenez.
Yeah.
Santi is also a good striker who doesn't score as often for the national team as everyone would like, but that's a pretty potent duo. And they didn't play Montes, their other center back, last night because he's suspended. And I thought the back four played really well. Canada is really hard to play. It's a Marsh team. They're very, very quick and aggressive. And when they can get the ball, when they can get you knocking it about, when they can press you, when they can throw numbers into the attacking half, they take the ball away. They're very difficult to play. And they could have scored last night. They had some chances, but Mexico had more quality in the end, and they had finishers. Again, you can't win if you don't score, and Canada did not score, and Mexico had a guy who scored twice. That free kick was spectacular. It couldn't have been better placed. Whipped it around the near side of that post. Unstoppable. And a deserved victory. The Mexicans, this is huge for their confidence ahead of the World Cup. They've been so down on this team in Mexico. You know, I'm writing this book about the U.S.-Mexico rivalry. It'll be out in January 26th, but I'm spending a ton of time, you know, sort of immersed in the Mexican football culture, and it's great fun. I recommend people watching Liga MX, you know, on Telemundo and
Universo.
They're great games, and you don't need my Spanish sucks, and don't need it. It's great to have it, you know, to have it on, and it's great. It's great soccer down there, but man, they are very, very down on this team. And this win is really going to make a huge difference. I don't think they're going to play the U.S. again before the World Cup. It's very unlikely. And if they can get a win against Panama, which they should, they're going to be riding pretty high. And I'm happy for them. You know, they've been down. They've been just, you know, searching for answers. They can't beat the U.S. It really is. Annoys them when that happens. I mean, you know, Berhalter was five wins and, you know, He won five straight games against them. I mean, that's unheard of.
Record, yeah.
The U.S. has owned the Nations League. Let's talk a little bit about the Nations League.
Yeah, they dominated. U.S. been like this whole winner for the past since 2020, I believe.
Yeah, it sort of strikes people as a made up exhibition match, but it really is quite elegant the way it works. It gets, you know, countries like Belize and Guadeloupe games against like-minded or like-ability to opponents, but it also eventually funnels down the best eight teams into a Final Four like we have this weekend, and that's good, you know, to have a biennial in-between Gold Cup tournament that, you know, lets you play your regional rivals, the ones that will push you and develop you. That, you know, go outside the federation for the other kind of preparation you need. But, you know, it's just a shame. It would have been great to see US-Mexico out in LA on Sunday night. It would have been, you know, absolutely packed to the gills. And we're not going to get that. But I think they'll show up for Mexico, and they may show up in the same kind of numbers because, well, they get a chance to win a trophy on US soil, and nothing gives Mexican-Americans more pleasure than that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens the final for that game. Let's get back to Pochettino. Your thoughts over that? I mean, I think the honeymoon's over for him. He has 1 year left. I mean, 1 year to go for the World Cup. I think it's like 430-something days. But your thoughts, yeah. What does he need to do to get this team in order to have a good World Cup next year?
Well, I think they need to get healthy so they can play, you know, Balogun and Pulisic and Weah together, that they give Josh Sargent some more games, because I do think he's a potent goal scorer. He just couldn't do it last night. They have the pieces, but and why didn't Reyna play last night? They said that there were several people that couldn't play, but oh, look, we're actually going to get Reyna. He must have picked up a knock because he didn't play at all. And maybe that's why Tessman got the call in midfield, and they rotated McKennie out to the right in midfield instead. But yeah, just not as potent in midfield when you don't have Reyna at the point of that triangle. But Pochettino, his situation has been clear from the beginning. He's expected to do great things, and I don't think those expectations are outsized, even, you know, after this terrible performance. But also, when this World Cup comes and goes, he's probably gone. So they're never going to get rid of this guy. They've spent too much money. They would have to just go into a complete death spiral for him to be replaced. So that's a different sort of pressure. He's the guy. He's just going to have to take it on the chin when people ask him why the team's been so bad and get on with it. I hope they have lined up some good friendlies. I hope those performances are better. You know, we're stuck with him, but, you know, yeah. I don't feel like we're stuck with the guy. He's the best hire that Federation has ever made, the most high profile, capable manager that the national team has ever had. And I'm hoping that still comes good, you know, 437 days from now.
Yeah, we have one more tournament before the World Cup is the Gold Cup. I don't know if he's able to select like an A-team squad. I know that the Gold Cup's towards the end of summer after the FIFA Club World Cup, but I hope he has the opportunity to get some players that he needs to get ready for the World Cup, you know?
I don't think that's going to be an issue. In the past, they've used the Gold Club in sort of off years between World Cups to play the B team and get them some experience. Especially after this performance, I think Pochettino will lobby very hard to go after a first team, so that they need games together and they need to dominate teams like Panama that are just about as good as us, but not as potent. We have to show ourselves that we can score three goals against that team. It put them away. That's just not happened with Panama. And Panama is a good team, but we're going to play better teams in a World Cup, and that's just not good enough. So I hope they give everyone is on notice. I hope everyone is on notice that it's time to get together and play together more. The Gold Cup is the last chance to do that. The rest of them are going to be friendlies, and those are windows, and you're playing with your club team, and maybe you're not healthy. After the Club World Cup, people should be rested, and I'd be very surprised if they didn't have a full-strength team for that tournament.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, Matt Turner will hopefully get some club time next season somewhere. So we'll see what happens. Let's transition to college basketball, college hoops, March Madness, couple of upsets. But the big one was McNeese beating, I'm trying to pull, Clemson. But what are your thoughts over March Madness so far, Hal?
You know, I just sort of let the tournament wash over me these days. It's I don't really watch college basketball during the regular season because the games are meaningless. And, you know, the teams get in that get in. All the games that are on TV until the very last weekend of the season of these conference tournaments are just content for ESPN. And I just can't be bothered. There's other things going on in my life. But I can recommend it to people who are saying, oh, my God, that's terrible. I thought you called yourself a college basketball fan. Well, it's fun to actually look at a team like Florida for the first time and say, oh, well, I can see why they're 30-4. You get to know the field as the tournament goes along. You know, Duke is definitely a favorite for me, but Cooper Flagg, which we see a lot of those games up here in Maine because he's a Mainer, and they look very good. And I'd be shocked if he plays today against Mount St. Mary's. Why would you do that? He's getting over an ankle injury, and they're playing the 16 seed. If you can't beat them without this guy, then you probably don't deserve to be in the tournament. So I expect him to sit out. The 12-5 game, the McNeese State game, I did watch that. They were in control of that game throughout. It didn't look like It looked like the seeds were reversed. And the 12-5 matchup is always a great one. You always get a team that is way better than you think at 12. And Clemson, number 5 seed, that meaning a 20th ranked team in the country, they didn't look it the other night.
Yeah, quite something. March Madness continues today with the first round. So looking forward to what's going to happen in the next couple of days. Pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Feels like a World Cup vibe a little bit. I don't know if you get that from March Madness, but I have a feeling. No, okay.
No, I don't.
Your Celtics has a new owner, Bill Chisholm.
Yeah.
Purchased the Celtics teams for $61.1 billion. He is the managing partner at Symphony Technology Group. Mm-hmm. And you got a new owner. Your Celtics team has been on sale for a couple of years, I believe. Yeah. But your thoughts over this new ownership?
I don't know who this guy is. I don't know that anybody did. And I know that they've been for sale for a long time. And I guess the most interesting part to me is, how little this, you know, has to do with how the Celtics perform from year to year. The ownership group is not really that relevant. But it is interesting that now we have a new threshold for what these franchises are worth. And considering the ratings of the NBA, who's actually watching the product, the idea that we've set a new record is a little weird to me. I don't know. I can't, it's hard for me to get a handle on what these franchises are really worth. Because we can't even agree that the money that they just pay to televise these games makes any sense. You know, if I wasn't in a fantasy league, would I be watching regular season games? No is the answer. And that's why I don't watch regular season college games, because they're not very interesting in and of themselves. And they certainly have no meaning at all. I don't know. It's, you know, the Celtics have been a model franchise, and they've put together teams that, you know, other teams are emulating, you know, Cleveland and Atlanta and the Pistons. You know, these are all big defensively oriented, all switch teams. And that's a leadership that I think matters more. That's how the game is played from night to night. And, you know, who the owner is, I don't know. But I don't know who these people are. I wish them well. I don't have to worry about them moving the Celtics. That's always, you know, a blessing, you know, when you have this kind of upheaval in a place like Oklahoma City or Seattle. They'll tell you it's you don't exactly know where things are going to go, but
or Vancouver.
Vancouver, yeah, things move around, and they're. But I was listening to a really interesting conversation about the NBA, and you know, one of the things that they kept talking about was that, damn, there's 50 players who are 31 and older who are playing, you know, 25 minutes a night. That's a lot, and these are very deep teams now. And they probably could expand again, but how do you expand when no one's watching the product? How do you expand, you know, the, or bump up, how do you bump up the, you know, the amount of broadcast rights that TNT pays when no one's watching the product. You know, you can't monetize the idea that people are watching highlights on YouTube the next day. It's a very, very weird situation that isn't particular to the NBA because, you know, baseball ratings are down, hockey ratings are down, everything but football ratings are down. You know, people just, I think it's habits.
They're doing something right at the NFL.
Maybe. They do. I mean, they own the culture. I mean, that's what they do right.
Which is the same big question mark for the MLS too. Like one executive was complaining that, like, you know, there should be more games on local television or more like traditional like cable TV networks.
Yeah, it's interesting that they have the same. Of course, they went most of their games are on Apple TV. We should say so. You have to have Apple TV to stream them, and. When that was done, it was obviously a big chance that MLS took. No major sports league had done that. But I think we're going to see more of it. And a lot of people said, oh, they're on the leading edge of this trend. But we don't know how many people watch these games. We just don't. It's a black box. And you know, it's hard to quantify it in our brains. I don't have the Apple. I have Apple TV, but I don't pay for the MLS package. The last couple of years I've done it for the last half of the year, so I get the League's Cup and the playoffs. That's nice. I've also been surprised at how many of the MLS games are on ESPN and Fox on the weekends. You know, most weekends there's a game or two that's on, and that's sort of nice. I think you're still getting exposure. I don't know. I mean, MLS is in a weird space. Because they have this, you know, the fan culture they've created around the league games is great. All the stadiums are full. And if they're getting any viewership at all, I think they're happy. But the equation is different. In hockey, you need ratings to justify broadcast rights that someone's paying you in order to broadcast the games.
Quite something.
MLS doesn't do that. They don't care.
Apple's yeah, they in. Don't. Only Apple knows the ratings.
Only Apple knows the ratings, and I think they're in it for 10 years, and it's small potatoes for Apple in the great scheme of things. And
yeah.
Amazon may come in and offer some kind of bid for NBA games. They'd be thrilled to have it and throw those on HBO. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting talk. Very interesting talk the next year to see where these things go. What do you got there?
Yeah, so NBA, the TV rights for next year would be on ESPN, ABC, NBC, yeah. And Amazon. So it's going to be split in three. No TNT. That's the only difference. So
that is good,
good to see NBC back on it when they're cool. Hopefully they'll bring back their original intro song.
You like the intro song?
I love it. You?
I can't say that I remember it.
I can't remember to tune it, but...
That one?
Yes, that one. Yep, you nailed it. You're a better tuner than I am, at least. So, well, there you have it. NBA, MLS, TV rights. It'll be a debate for the next couple upcoming years. Netflix getting in the game as well. Before we go, predictions, USA versus Canada for the third place. Who you got?
Wow. That's a tough one. I'm going to pick the USA. I think they're going to be super motivated to win the game, but Canada is super motivated to win that game. They didn't. They both need the game badly, so I think there's going to be subs. I think you'll see a new keeper for the U.S. maybe, but I'm not sure. You know, they're going to put a team out. They can't afford to lose the game. Pochettino can't afford to lose the game. Yeah. And you know, the politics that have been swirling around Canada and Mexico and the United States, thanks to our president, they've made this game pretty fun. I didn't want it. I wanted the U.S. Mexico, which would have been fun in that political sense, but in a competitive sense too. But Jesse Marsh and the Canadians, they want to win that game bad. And that's some good viewing. That probably as good a third place game as you could hope to get.
Yeah. And then the finale, Mexico, Panama. Who do you have?
Favorites? I think Mexico rolls. I think Mexico doesn't have the problem, getting goals on the board against a team like Panama. For whatever reason, Panama has our number. And Mexico is just more capable of taking people on and beating them. And that's one of the things that I noticed last night, too, was that we were so patient, you know, and passing it around. And they just backed. They didn't have to work very hard to keep us off the board. That's what was really depressing.
Yeah, quite something. Well, there you have it. We had a lot of soccer last night. Continues this weekend. Argentina versus Uruguay as a classic tonight. So that should
now. How do we get that game? Where did we watch that game, Tom?
I think it's on Panatiz, which is like you got to pay $10 subscription plus $50. So it's like $60 to watch.
Oh, man, I don't think that's worth it. What about VIX?
VIX, I think you watch a lot of the UEFA games, but not much else.
Interesting. I would do that. I would definitely check out, you know, the South American qualifying is great stuff.
They're one of the best, I think.
Yes.
They're tougher. Europe is actually a little easier, I think. It depends on the groups, but usually it's a little easier. But South America is incredible. But if you have a chance to watch in VIX, go ahead. But yeah, they're hard to watch. Sometimes they show it on Universo sometimes, but
yeah.
Or Telemundo.
That's worth checking out. Yeah. Cause they do pick up a game every now and again. And I get those, as part of my YouTube TV, you know, subscription. So right. I watched both games last night on Telemundo. So
yeah. So it should be something. Yeah. Brazil was on Universo last night, defeating, Colombia 2-1. So that was a good game. Goal, late goal by Vinicius Jr. So anyways, we didn't have time to talk about Tottenham, but what's the best way to reach you, Hal?
Right down there, genzero.halphillips.net is my threads handle and my book site. I would also say you can find it, halphillips.net, a lot of stuff. Go there and check out the piece I wrote several years back about how they should just let every college basketball team into the tournament. They should have a 351 team tournament. The week that we spend, you know, doing college conference tournaments, if we use that to play three games, we get down from 351 to 64.
Wow.
In three games, three rounds. And it would be so much fun. And we wouldn't have any of the conference tournament BS to deal with. What a waste of a week that is.
It is something to do with college. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on X and Instagram. We'll be live tweeting throughout the weekend. March Madness, first round, second round this weekend. So looking forward to it. And the Nations League this Sunday, 5:30 p.m. USA, Canada, and then later on Mexico, Panama. Wow, what a weekend in sports. Hal, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Santi. Always a pleasure on this end.
And this was your update.